This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Russia's foreign intelligence chief accuses Washington of spreading Nazi-style propaganda against Moscow, saying the US seeks to discredit Russia's leadership. A new report says hundreds of Native American children have died in US state-run boarding schools due to physical abuse and other forms of punishment. Also in the headlines, Iran's foreign minister says people in the West Asia region will never accept normalization of their country's relations with, quote, the terrorist and child-killing Israeli regime. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Russia's foreign intelligence chief accuses Washington of spreading Nazi-style propaganda against Moscow. Sergei Naryshkin said the U.S. encourages the spreading of fake information on the popular Telegram messaging service. He said the U.S. seeks to discredit and, quote, dehumanize Russia's political and military leadership in the eyes of Russian people. Naryshkin also compared the U.S. State Department to the infamous Nazi propaganda machine run by Joseph Goebbels. The U.S. State Department rejected the Russian officials' quote, incredibly ironic statements. The department accused Moscow of longstanding state-sponsored disinformation and propaganda efforts. Russia has imposed sanctions on over 30 EU, US, and Singaporean energy companies in retaliation for Western bans on Moscow. The blacklisted firms include Gazprom, that is Germania, a former subsidiary of Russia's major gas exporter Gazprom, Europol Gas, which owns the Polish part of the Yamal-Europe gas pipeline, is also among the sanctioned companies. The sanctions include a ban on transactions and the entry into Russian ports of vessels linked to the affected companies. The list published by Russia doesn't provide further details of the sanctions. However, under a presidential decree issued earlier this month, no Russian entity is allowed to make deals with sanctioned parties or fulfill its obligations under existing agreements. The US and its allies have imposed several rounds of sanctions against Moscow. In response to the war in Ukraine, Russia has repeatedly warned that it would retaliate for the Western sanctions in kind. EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen leveling some harsh criticism at Russia and calling it a big threat to international order.
And this brings me to Russia. It is today the most direct threat to the world order. With a barbaric war against Ukraine, and its worrying pact with China and their call for new and very much arbitrary international relations.
The European Commission chief was speaking after meeting Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, along with the European Council President Charles Michel. Kishida also said the Ukraine war is not just a matter that concerns Europe, but that it shakes the core of the international order, including Asia. The top EU officials are in Tokyo for an annual round of talks that come with much of the international community rallying to pressure Moscow over the Ukraine war. The European Commission proposes to establish a new EU agency to tackle the growing problem of child sex abuse in the 27-nation bloc. Unveiling the plans, the Commission says reports of such abuse in the EU have increased by 6,000% during the past decade. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Many believe the crime of sexually abusing a child is even more heinous than murder. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, says 85 million child sex abuse videos and images were identified by the bloc's authorities last year, a record number.
In the EU, the reports related to the European Union member states have increased with 6,000% the last 10 years. Why is this increasing? Of course, nobody knows for sure.
The Commission says it's not known exactly why these crimes are on the rise, but analysts say the EU has been allowed to expand too quickly, with some nations harbouring criminal gangs.
And now, of course, thanks to or due to open borders, are these criminal networks, they started to flourish and integrate further.
The EU Commission is proposing to establish a new agency designed to prevent child sex abuse and support victims.
At least one in five children falls victim to sexual violence during childhood in Europe. So these numbers are really embarrassing.
Anti-trafficking agencies say 2 million children recently entered the EU having fled the conflict in Ukraine, many of them unaccompanied. Gangs and individuals see an opportunity for exploitation.
The police and child protection services need to work together, plus they need to work together across borders, and there need to be better information sharing platforms.
The European Commission has a message for predators.
We are coming for you.
But critics are asking why more has not been done up to now. Given that it promotes itself as a project designed to protect and improve the lives of citizens, rights groups say this issue seriously undermines the credibility of the European Union. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A new report shows more than 500 Native American children have died in US government-run boarding schools over a period of more than a century. The Department of Interior's report says indigenous children were exposed to physical abuse, food denial, and other forms of punishment in state-run boarding schools. It says the school system pursued the twin goals of cultural assimilation and territorial dispossession of indigenous peoples through relocation of their children. The study identified more than 400 such schools operating in the U.S. for 1.5 centuries, starting in the early 19th century. There are also more than 50 marked or unmarked burial sites. The deaths of 500 indigenous students were attributed to only 19 schools that have been investigated so far. The department says further investigation may increase the number of student deaths to thousands or even tens of thousands. Staying in the United States, where many families are facing a severe shortage of baby formula, which has sent them on a desperate hunt for the vital supplies. The shortage is particularly impacting mothers who cannot breastfeed and those whose children cannot tolerate other nutrition sources. Many mothers are watering down formula or rationing it. The problem is worse for mothers who lack health insurance or work at low-wage jobs with little opportunity to breastfeed. The situation got worse on February 17 when manufacturer Abbott recalled formula made at its Michigan factory. According to the data collection agency DataAssembly, 43% of the usual formula was out of stock across the U.S. last month. Iran's foreign minister says people in the West Asia region will never accept normalization of their country's ties with, quote, the terrorist and child-killing Israeli regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a meeting with the visiting Lebanese culture minister, Mohammad Wissam al-Murtada, in Tehran. The top Iranian diplomat added that the resistance of the Lebanese people in the face of Israel's frequent acts of aggression is a brilliant model for other regional nations. He said Tehran is ready to boost economic cooperation with Beirut, despite the cruel Western sanctions. Al-Murtada, for his part, said Lebanon is prepared to expand relations with all friendly countries in the region, especially Iran. Now, Israeli forces kill a reporter working for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera TV network in the occupied West Bank. Shireen Abu Aqala was fatally shot while covering an Israeli army raid on the city of Jenin. She was a veteran Palestinian reporter for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel. Palestinians have gathered in the city of Ramallah to pay tribute to her. Israeli officials say Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist, but another reporter accompanying Abu Aqala, who was also shot in the back, calls the Israeli claim an outright lie.
Palestinian reporter Shireen Abu Aqala was shot while covering an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. The veteran reporter who worked for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel was shot in the face by Israeli forces despite wearing a blue flak jacket clearly marked with press. Israeli officials claim Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist. But another reporter accompanying Abu Aqla, who was also shot in the back, rejected the Israeli claim as a lie.
The occupation is murderous and criminal. They shot us for no reason. We were shocked by the shooting. I was lucky and I turned my back when the first bullet was shot and injured my back. They wanted to kill me. I was injured in my back and the second bullet shot my colleague Shireen and caused her death. There were no armed people and we cannot put our lives in danger and say the wrong narrative. The Israeli army is a liar and criminal and despicable.
Al Jazeera also said Abu Aqla was assassinated in cold blood and urged the international community to hold Israeli forces responsible. The Palestinian Authority said Abu Aqla's killing is a heinous crime and part of the occupation's policy of targeting journalists to obscure the truth and commit crimes silently. In Gaza, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas described the killing as a new crime against journalism in Palestine, while the Islamic Jihad movement branded it an unsuccessful attempt to cover up realities. The journalist's murder also drew widespread condemnation from countries across the world, such as Iran, Pakistan, and Belgium. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Saeed Khatibzadeh, called Abu Aqla's killing a deliberate and criminal act. The United Nations called for an immediate and thorough investigation and for those responsible to be held accountable, a request that was echoed by the European Union.
We immediately called for a swift and independent investigation so that the perpetrators of this terrible crime can be brought to justice.
The International Federation of Journalists said it would submit Abu Aqla's case to the International Criminal Court. Abu Aqla's murder is just the tip of the iceberg of crimes committed by Israel against journalists. Reporters Without Borders say nearly 150 Palestinian journalists have been wounded by Israeli forces across the Gaza Strip and the West Bank since 2018. Israeli strikes also destroyed a building housing local offices of media outlets during its last year's war on Gaza. Such atrocity, along with frequent raids and shootings in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, show that the Israeli regime has no scruples about murdering unarmed Palestinians. The silence of the international community is also seen as a green light for Israel to continue such crimes.
The Spanish government is shaken by a deepening scandal over the use of Israeli Pegasus spyware to hack the cell phones of pro-independence leaders of Catalonia. The same scandal has already engulfed other European states as well, dealing blows to people's trust in their governments.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, your host Ali Raza. Israeli spyware Pegasus is making headlines again in Europe, and this time in Spain, where the chief of intelligence just lost her job amid a scandal over hacking the phones of top politicians. Spain's intelligence chief was ousted by the government following revelations that her agency had used Pegasus to infiltrate the cell phones of Catalan separatist politicians. This is seen as the largest political espionage case ever disclosed, which implicates not just Spain, but also other European states. In reaction to the news, social media users highlighted the scale of the hacking attacks, which allowed the downloading of phone data from over 60 pro-independence leaders, their lawyers, journalists, and top officials. They also slammed Madrid for failing to properly investigate the scandal. Our first tweet of the day comes from Chuck Hamilton. He said, over 200 Spanish mobile numbers, possible targets of Israeli Pegasus software. Data leak reveals scale of potential surveillance by Israel's NSO group client believed to be Morocco. Maribel has our next tweet. Pegasus, developed by the Israeli company NSO Group, allows hackers to access a target's phone data and sensors, including encrypted messages, data, text, emails, photos, the camera, and microphone. Israel classifies Pegasus as a weapon. Gorka Noor said, Spain not only refuses to create an inquiry committee to investigate the use of Pegasus spyware by the Spanish CNI against Catalans, they did the same and refused to create an inquiry committee to investigate the terrorist attack in Barcelona. It's enough. Matt Nilsson has our next tweet. At least 63 people connected with the Catalan independence movement had been targeted or infected with Pegasus spyware between 2017 and 2020. Spanish spy chief now finally sacked and hopefully jailed. NSO, the Israeli firm that developed Pegasus, claims that they only sell the spyware to countries to track criminals and terrorists with Tel Aviv's green light. The firm, though, has been under fire for promoting repression as well as violating users' privacy around the world. Our next tweet comes from Pavan Chandrasekhar. Pegasus spyware was developed by Israel's NSO group, infects iPhones and Android phones. Data can be extracted and cameras/microphones can be secretly activated to record calls. The real-time recordings are hosted on Israeli servers and likely accessible and alterable by them? Thank you. I'll refer you back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
To the United States now, where a coastline fire is burning across nearly 80 hectares of land in the state of California. At least 20 homes have been destroyed in the city of Laguna Niguel. In Orange County, cold winds coming from the Pacific Ocean pushed the blaze up a rugged canyon, sending embers into homes and sparking spot fires in some areas. As you can see in these images, several homes at the tip of the canyon are on fire, with smoke coming from numerous other homes deeper in the neighborhood. The flames have been fueled by winds from the desert, as well as strong gusts from the Pacific Ocean. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
In the limelight.
Fossil fuel companies have access to an obscure legal tool that could jeopardize worldwide efforts to protect the climate, and they are starting to use it. The result could cost countries that press ahead with those efforts billions of dollars. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Rachel Trasher, writer. This article is published under the heading Treaties Protecting Fossil Fuel Investors Threaten Global Efforts to Save the Climate and Could Cost Countries Billions. Stay tuned for more. Fossil fuel companies have access to an obscure legal tool that could jeopardize worldwide efforts to protect the climate, and they are starting to use it. The result could cost countries that press ahead with those efforts billions of dollars. Over the past 50 years, countries have signed thousands of treaties that protect foreign investors from government actions. These treaties are like contracts between national governments meant to entice investors to bringing projects with the promise of local jobs and access to new technologies. But now, as countries try to phase out fossil fuels to slow climate change,
These agreements could leave the public facing overwhelming legal and financial risks. The treaties allow investors to sue governments for compensation in a process called Investor-State Dispute Settlement, or ISDS. In short, investors could use ISDS clauses to demand compensation in response to government actions to limit fossil fuels, such as cancelling pipelines and denying drilling permits. For example, TC Energy, a Canadian company, is currently seeking more than $15 billion U.S. dollars over U.S. President Joe Biden's cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline. In a study published on May 5th, 2022, in the journal Science, we estimate that countries would face up to $340 billion in legal and financial risks for cancelling fossil fuel projects that are subjected to treaties with ISDS clauses. That's more than countries worldwide put into climate adaptation and mitigation measures combined in fiscal year 2019. And it doesn't include the risks of phasing out coal investments or cancelling fossil fuel infrastructure projects, like pipelines and liquefied natural gas terminals. It means that money countries might otherwise spend to build a low-carbon future could instead go to the very industries that have knowingly been fueling climate change, severely jeopardizing countries' capacity to propel the green energy transition forward. Of the world's 55,206 upstream oil and gas projects that are in the early stages of development, there are 10,506 projects identified, 19% of the total that were protected by 334 treaties providing access to ISDS. That number could be much higher. We could only identify the headquarters of project owners, not the overall corporate structures of the investments due to limited data. We also know that law firms are advertising clients in industry to structure investments to ensure access to ISDS through processes such as using subsidiaries in countries with treaty protections. Depending upon future oil and gas prices, scientists have found that the total net present value of those projects is expected to reach $60 billion to $234 billion. If countries cancel these protected projects, foreign investors could sue for financial compensation in line with these valuations. Doing so would put several low- and middle-income countries at severe risk. Mozambique and Guyana could each face over $20 billion in potential losses from ISDS claims. If countries also cancel oil and gas projects that are further along in development but are not yet producing, they face more risk. Experts have found that 12% of those projects worldwide are protected by investment treaties, and their investors could sue for $32 billion to $106 billion. Cancelling approved projects could prove exceptionally risky for countries like Kazakhstan, which could lose $6 billion to $18 billion, and Indonesia, with $3 billion to $4 billion at risk. Cancelling coal investments for fossil fuel infrastructural projects like pipelines and liquefied natural gas terminals could lead to even more claims. There have been at least 231 ISDS cases involving fossil fuels so far. Just the threat of massive payments to investors could cause many countries to delay climate mitigation policies, causing so-called regulatory chill. Both Denmark and New Zealand, for example, seem to have designed their fossil fuel phase-out plans
specifically to minimize their exposure to ISDS. Some climate policy experts have suggested that Denmark may have chosen 2050 as the end of date for oil and gas extraction to avoid disputes with existing exploration license holders. New Zealand banned all new offshore oil exploration in 2018, but did not cancel any existing contracts. The climate minister acknowledged that a more aggressive plan would have run afoul of investor state settlements. France revised a draft law banning fossil fuel extraction by 2040 and allowing the renewal of oil exploitation permits after the Canadian company Vermilion threatened to launch an ISDS case. While these findings are alarming, countries have options to avoid onerous legal and financial risks. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development is currently discussing proposals on the future of investment treaties. A straightforward approach would be for countries to terminate or withdraw from these treaties. Some officials have expressed concern about unforeseen impacts of unilaterally terminating investment treaties, but other countries have already done so with few or no real economic consequences. For more complex trade agreements, countries can negotiate to remove ISDS provisions, as the United States and Canada did when they replaced the North American Free Trade Agreement with the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. Additional challenges stem from sunset clauses that bind countries for a decade or more after they have withdrawn from some treaties. Such is the case for Italy, which withdrew from the Energy Charter Treaty in 2016. It is currently stuck in an ongoing ISDS case initiated by UK company Rockhopper over a ban on coastal oil drilling. The Energy Charter Treaty, a special investment agreement covering the energy sector, emerged as the greatest single contributor to global ISDS risks in data set. Many European countries are currently considering whether to leave the treaty and how to avoid the same fate as Italy. If all country parties to a treaty can agree together to withdraw, they could collectively sidestep the sunset clause through mutual agreement. Combating climate change is not cheap. Actions by governments and the private sector are both needed to slow global warming and keep it from fueling increasingly devastating disasters. In the end, the question is who will pay and be paid in the global energy transition. We believe that, at the very least, it would be counterproductive to divert critical public finance from essential mitigation and adaptation efforts to the pockets of fossil fuel industry investors whose products caused the problem in the first place.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Free territory.
Part 1.
During my childhood, the conquest of desert was a dream that took me on a vacation to Patagonia. 200 kilometers on a straight line through the province of La Pampa. Almost 150 years have passed since the Argentine Republic launched an offensive to expand its borders and dispose the indigenous people of their ancestral lands in the south part of the country. The conquest of the desert was not a trip. It was a campaign of extermination carried out by its two main protagonists, Julio Argentino Roca and Remington Rifles, who came from the United States. Julio Argentino Roca was a 35-year-old young general with a brilliant military career. In 1878, he was Minister of War and Navy. He was the intellectual and material author of the first genocide in the history of Argentina. While he was presenting his plans for the desert campaign to the assembly, he said, "We have 6,000 soldiers who are armed with the latest modern military inventions, in order to fight against the 2,000 Indians who have no defense other than dispersion and no weapons other than the primitive spear." One of the most powerful indigenous chiefs of Patagonia was Modesto Encalao, a man who did not have a hostile policy towards the government of Argentina. He was deprived of his land, sent to prison, and later he was transferred to Buenos Aires. He was condemned to slavery in the last days of his life in the underground Museum of Natural Sciences of La Plata. Encalao was tormented and died far from his homeland. He spent long hours looking at the remains of his wife and loved ones that were exhibited by Perito Moreno as anthropological pieces in the museum. Those who saw him in the last days of his life described him as a ghost. The military soldiers had also stolen his children. Later, they gave the children to the families of the generals to work as their servants. Some reports point out that before his death, he ripped off the white man's clothes. Encalao had resisted declaring himself as Argentinian. His outraged body also remained as a museum piece for more than 100 years. At the beginning of the 21st century, many children from Patagonia wrote letters to the authorities of the La Plata Museum to ask them to return his remains to the original territory. Emmanuel Roman, a 10-year-old boy, wrote a letter, "I'm asking you to return the body parts of the aboriginals to their families. What they did to them were inhumane, removing the hair, brain, and body parts of Chief Enakayal. I do not want the remains to be exhibited in a museum. He was a person like you and I. Sincerely yours." His body parts have been resting in Valladateca region since 2014, but I felt that he was still a prisoner. Other sources show that in reality their camps were not in that valley, but on the shores of Nahuel Huapi Lake. Enakayal's portrait that is marked by the failure of people functions as a time machine that reminds indignation and impotence. I hope when he took his last breath in those torture halls in La Plata, he saw images of his territory, a free territory. Today, the Mapuche people live on the fringe of the Patagonian cities and in hundreds of rural communities that record each particular reality. Since the conquest of desert, this indigenous ethnic group has struggled to recover the territories stolen by the state in Argentina, or Puel Mapu. As we know the original language, we understand that most of the complaints were made in the provinces of Necuan, Rio Negro, and Chapat. Before the formation of the states at the beginning of the 19th century, these regions were inhabited by Mapuches, Tehuelches, and other small villages. The Neuquén community of Paisil Antirriao took the first steps to move towards understanding the problems of the land with its protagonists. In 1902, the Argentine state granted the possession of 625 hectares to Lunco Ignacio Antriao on the banks of the Nahuel Huapi and Corrientoso lakes, where Villa La Angostura is currently located. Villa La Angostura is an exclusive tourist center where President Mauricio Macri usually goes there for his vacations. More than 100 years ago, the villa did not exist, and the Argentine state had to consolidate its sovereignty in the place, which is why they officially recognized the ownership of land to those who lived in the place ancestrally. A wooden statue reminds us of Lunco Antirriao, the person who helped the Argentinians during the border demarcation. By consolidating the villa as a touristic paradise, the state began to usurp territory until it occupied 500 out of the 625 of the community's hectares. In 2004, Emmanuel Genabili, NBA world star, bought 11 hectares inside of community land. Rosa was living here until the millionaire player claimed for the seizure of the territory.
Ginobili fakes, lost it, gets it back, flips it up and flips it in! Exclamation point from Manu Ginobili!
The claim was rejected, but Rosa experienced several eviction attempts. In 1878, the president of Argentina, Nicolas Avellaneda, stated, "Our self-respect as a virile people obliges us to put down as soon as possible, by reason or by force, this handful of savages who destroy our wealth and prevent us from definitely occupying, in the name of law, progress, and our own security, the richest and most fertile lands of the Republic." Conflicts over lands acquire more dramatic cast in 39 kilometers south of Bariloche, the tourist epicenter of Patagonia. A Mapuche group from the suburbs of the city recovered a property that is claimed by national parks. In November 25, 2017, state security forces entered the territory and killed Rafael Noel. The government accused the young people of having used firearms and said that they belonged to RAM, the Mapuche Ancestral Resistance. It is considered as an organization that the executive relates it to guerrilla and terrorist activities. No firearms were seized during the operation. On August 1, 2017, another state operation killed Santiago Maldonado in a recovered territory in Cushman, Chubut province. The case seriously affected the image of the national government, as the young man's body remained missing for 78 days. Minister Bullrich belongs to an oligarchic family that benefited directly from the desert campaign. Likewise, Esteban Bullrich, who claimed the conquest as the Minister of Education. According to most accounts, Maldonado had entered the Chubut River with the intention of crossing it in an attempt to prevent the entrance of forces of repression. 5 days before the legislative elections, his body was found floating during a rake of the river. Cushman's Polaf in resistance was recovered from the Benetton company by a group that belongs to Lonco Facundo Jones Huala, syndicated as RAM leader. In January of that same year, his community had suffered a violent eviction attempt. Not all police officers hesitated to confront their ethnic contradictions. During the judicial hearings of Jones Wallace's group, two agents are murmuring, and finally they recognize each other as Mapuche. But they affirm that these young people are an embarrassment and question their original membership.
The Limelight.
20 years later, none of those responsible for the CIA's heinous regime of torture were ever prosecuted, lamented Representative Ilhan Omar, adding, instead they got promotions. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading "The Classified Docs Show CIA Used Prisoner as a Torture Training Prop." Stay tuned for more. A prisoner at a Central Intelligence Agency black site in Afghanistan was used as a training prop to teach U.S. operatives how to torture other prisoners, leaving him with serious brain damage and other ailments, newly declassified documents published recently affirmed. Ammar al-Baluchi, a 44-year-old Kuwaiti national, is currently imprisoned at the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where he is one of five men awaiting trial by military commission for alleged involvement in plotting the September 11 to 01 attacks on the United States. The case, which has been delayed due to disputes over the admissibility of defendant testimony extracted through torture, has been in pretrial hearings for more than a decade. The subject of the U.S. government's extraordinary rendition program, al-Baluchi, was captured in Pakistan in 2003 and then transferred to secret CIA prison known both as Cobalt and the Salt Pit north of Kabul, Afghanistan. The so-called black site gained international attention after revelations that prisoner Gul Rahman was tortured to death there in 2002, and that instead of being punished, the CIA officer in charge of the site was subsequently promoted. 20 years later, none of those responsible for the CIA's heinous regime of torture were ever prosecuted. U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar tweeted recently in response to a Guardian report on al-Baluchi's experience, adding, "Instead, they got promotions." According to a declassified 2008 report by the CIA Inspector General's office, agency officials knew that al-Baluchi no longer posed a terror threat, but rendered him to the salt pit, where he was subjected to techniques that were approved under the George W. Bush administration's enhanced interrogation regimen, as well as unauthorized torture. Not only was al-Baluchi was subjected to the authorized torture of walling, in which naked prisoners were slammed against plywood and, in departures from the approved method, concrete walls, he was also used a training prop to teach trainee interrogators how to perform the technique. According to the declassified report, all the interrogation students lined up to wall Ammar so that the instructor could certify them on their ability to use the technique. The torture training sessions typically did not last for more than 2 hours at a time, the document states. "They smashed my head against the wall repeatedly. It continued until I lost count at each session," al-Baluchi recounted, adding, "As my head was being hit each time, I would see sparks of lights in my eyes. As the intensity of the sparks were increasing as a result of repeated hitting, all of a sudden I felt a strong jolt of electricity in my head. Then I couldn't see anything and everything went dark and I passed out." Previously, declassified documents state that James Mitchell, who along with his associate John Bruce Jessen, was paid $81 million by the CIA to oversee the torture and interrogation of prisoners in the so-called War on Terror, told one of al-Baluchi's lawyers that it looks like they use your client as a training prop. In 2018, Al-Baluchi underwent an MRI examination which found abnormalities indicating moderate to severe brain damage, which were consistent with traumatic brain injury. According to a neuropsychologist evaluation, Al-Baluchi also suffers from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. The Inspector General's report notes that Al-Baluchi's torture did not produce any useful intelligence and that he fabricated the information he provided in an effort to end his torment. The document also paints Al-Baluchi in a sympathetic light, referring to him as one of the more cooperative, likable, even gentle detainees, and as one of the more intelligent or bookish prisoners. Some interrogators expressed remorse for their actions, with one saying there is no horror in it and another stating that he wished he had never been asked to participate in torture. Al-Baluchi was subsequently transferred to numerous other black sites, including one in Vilnius, Lithuania, where he was tortured by the notorious CIA operative known as the Preacher due to his penchant for infusing interrogation sessions with religious fervor. In 2006, Al-Baluchi was transferred to Guantanamo. The Inspector General's reporting concludes that the CIA's rationale for detaining Al-Baluchi was fuzzy and circular. We now know that the CIA's brutalization of Ammar at the black sites was secretly condemned by the agency itself. Alka Pradhan, one of Al-Baluchi's military commission attorneys, told Forever Wars Spencer Ackerman, adding, "But it didn't stop the US government from holding him in a CIA facility at Guantanamo and trying to execute him using evidence derived from that very same treatment." Recently, the New York Times reported that U.S. military prosecutors are engaged in talks with lawyers for five Guantanamo defendants, including Al-Baluchi and his uncle, alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, to possibly negotiate plea deals that will spare the men from execution but result in their lifetime imprisonment. The issue of torture has proved an impediment to the prosecution of terrorism suspects and may at least partially explain prosecutors' newfound willingness to negotiate plea agreements. Last November, 7 out of 8 members of a military jury convened to hear the case against Guantanamo detainee Majid Khan recommended clemency after the defendant testified how he endured torture, including rape, being hung from a ceiling beam, and being subjected to the interrupted drowning method known as waterboarding. The jurors called Khan's treatment an affront to the concept of justice and a stain on the moral fiber of America. Numerous Guantanamo prosecutors have also resigned their post in protest, with former lead prosecutor Colonel Morris Davis condemning what he called rigged military commissions designed to ensure that every defendant is convicted.
yesterday's attacks and other things.
Some say that he does have ties to Muslim extremists. I don't know.
In May 2021, the Israeli regime launched a series of airstrikes on residential tower blocks in the Gaza Strip, with the intention of scaring the Palestinians into submission. But the Palestinians did not react the way the Israelis hoped. They didn't give up. Instead, they showed remarkable resilience during the conflict, dealing serious blows to the apparently formidable regime with their homemade rockets. The rockets launched from Gaza were able to bypass Israel's much-vaunted Iron Dome, an outstanding achievement for the Axis of Resistance, and equally an embarrassing defeat for the regime. The attacks were precise and targeted police and military centers, with the clear aim of shaking Israel's false sense of military and security prowess. The Israelis then threatened a land invasion to root out the resistance, but it never happened. Israeli soldiers were told that they would be turned from hunters into prey in the Gaza swamp. In the words of Palestinian-American journalist Leila Al-Aryan, over the years, Palestinians have internalized their struggle against the colonialist settler nature of their invaders. They know that the Zionist movement and its aggressive state will not stop short of their total annihilation. Israel's security and military circles are now in a constant state.